You're listening to Everybody Pulls the Tarp, the go-to podcast for high performers. I'm Andrew Moses. Each week, you'll hear my thought-provoking conversations with Olympians, pro athletes, CEOs, elite coaches, best-selling authors, and other high performers to uncover their secrets to success. Get ready to be inspired each week when we talk about leadership, teamwork, work ethic, and more. Are you ready? Let's go. This week, my guest is University of North Carolina field hockey head coach, Aaron Mattson. And Aaron's story is unlike any you've ever heard before. In January 2023, UNC named Aaron its field hockey head coach. At the time, she was just 22 years old and had just graduated from UNC only 2 months prior. Suddenly, she was the head coach for the same program she had just finished starring in as a student athlete. And are you ready for this? In her first year as a head coach, she went on to lead UNC to a national title, officially becoming the youngest college head coach to win a national championship. But to understand Aaron as a coach, you first have to understand her as a player. A leader on and off the field, Aaron was a three-time captain and a four-time All-ACC academic team honoree. Aaron won the Honda Sport Award 3 times, an award given each year to the best female collegiate field hockey player in the United States. As a player, Aaron and her teammates won 4 field hockey national championships, including 3 undefeated seasons. She's also a 5-time ACC Offensive Player of the Year, which makes her the only student athlete in any sport to earn ACC Player of the Year honors 5 times. So Aaron is obviously one of the most decorated collegiate athletes ever. But eventually, the question that needed to be answered was, could a great player be a great coach at the age of just 22? And could she coach the players that just a few months before were her teammates, her close friends, and even in some instances, her roommates? Well, Aaron believed in herself, and UNC Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham did too. Aaron went through the candidate process and search committee just like all the other candidates, and on January 31st, 2023, she was named the team's head coach. As you'll hear in our conversation, in many ways, Aaron has been preparing for this opportunity her entire life. She's always led by example, been hungry to learn from others, and worked as hard at her craft as anybody on the planet. Ultimately, she was ready to be a coach, but like anything we do in life, it wasn't without its challenges. Aaron faced those challenges head on and led her team on an extraordinary national championship run. Aaron and I caught up a few weeks ago to talk all about it. And for me, one of the main takeaways from my conversation with Aaron is the remarkable ability she has to set her sights on lofty, ambitious, long-term goals while also being able to focus on the small, incremental, short-term steps that it takes to get there. This conversation is for anyone out there who wants to take a bold risk, do something that's never been done before, and defy conventional wisdom, no matter where you are in your personal or professional journey. This episode is jam-packed with so many powerful lessons, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So, let's pull the tarp and get straight to Aaron Mattson. Aaron, I can't wait to dive in. So they call UNC the University of National Champions, and I think you embody it almost more than anybody. A 4-time national champion as a player. And then in January 2023, at just the age of 22, after a couple months of, from graduating, you're named the head coach of the program that you had starred in as a student athlete. Then you went on to lead the team to a national championship in your first year as a coach. Aaron, where I want to begin, towards the end of your time as a student athlete at UNC, you had the sense that legendary head coach Karen Shelton would be retiring. You mm-hmm. went to UNC Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham and told him you wanted a shot at the job. I'm curious, what do you remember most about that conversation as you think back on it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I basically was just like you said, I just didn't want to be overlooked. It wasn't like, hey, I expect this job, whatever. I knew it was going to take a lot of work from me to answer his questions, answer the executive team's questions, sit with other coaches, learn, like prove to them that I could do this. But he was definitely surprised. He definitely looked at me like, okay, never would have thought that you would have come to me and that I would be even entertaining this thought. And then I guess the biggest piece of the story also that makes it even more dope is he goes, okay, fine. Thanks for coming. I appreciate the heads up. Now go win a national championship and then come back and talk to me. So I remember looking at him and saying in my own mind, okay, that's all you want me to do. That's what we do here. What do you mean? Fine. Great. I'll see you in a couple months. And I went back and obviously, you know, time passed and we worked on a ton of stuff as a team on the field, off the field, everything, but we won. And then I remember looking coach in the eye after the game and said, okay, you know, let's do this. And we both knew it. And then I went back to Bubba however long after, and he knew it was coming and we both laughed about it. And then he said, okay, you have to earn it. And yeah, I spent my break building a resume and all of that. And here we are.
He, in that initial, or I guess that second conversation, after you had won the national championship, like he had asked you to do, and you came back to him and he kind of knew what you were coming for at that point, and you got into the formal process. Did he articulate anything to you at that point that were either strengths that he saw in you that would make it a possibility that they would actually hire you for the job? And did he articulate, on the flip side, concerns, specific concerns that he felt like you needed to remediate in his mind or in a committee's mind to have a chance at the job? Talk about that for a moment.
Sure. Honestly, for the most part, it was pretty neutral. And I think, I mean, that's how any professional person should handle a job interview. There was never any hinting at me being the final candidate. There was never hinting of me like not being in the running anymore. It was super neutral the whole time, which was aggravating on my end because I was like, just give me something to work with. But he was professional the whole time. Everyone throughout the hiring process was professional. It wasn't much back and forth, I guess you could say. It was a very typical, and I don't know how it was for the other candidates, but these are our questions. Let's hear your answer. And it's not like it was, oh, good point about this or this and whatever. I had to predict his concerns, I guess, which, I mean, they weren't that difficult. I was 22 and I would be coaching the girls I currently, you know, was living with. Like, I knew what was going through his mind. But I also knew he had no doubt of my love for this place. He had no doubt for my knowledge of hockey, for my work ethic, my reputation. So I kind of just through the relationship we built over the years with this not being a point of conversation, I knew where his head was at. But no, it definitely, I don't think there was any hinting either way. And I didn't know. He sent me a text. I was in a hotel with my boyfriend the night before I was offered the job, and he sent me a text, bare minute, like period, question mark, no emojis, no emotion, anything, like, hey, are you free tomorrow at 9 a.m.? And I was like, of course, reading into it. Is this good? Is this bad? Whatever. Like, even then, he didn't give me anything. And I didn't know until he slid the paper across the table that the job was mine. So yeah, it was a long month and a half or so.
So that moment he slides the paper across the table and you see what's there, what's the first thing that races like through your mind? Paint that scene for me.
Yeah. So it's actually funny. The first thought that popped into my mind was, thank God I planned practices and already outlined my meeting with the team and the staff and everything, because, and that's why I did it. But I knew once I was hired, if that was the case, we would be jumping right into it. And that's how it was. I was swooped off to do media stuff before the public announcement came out. We had an emergency team meeting that night and he introduced me, but like, I didn't have any time to plan anything. I had to have it prepared. So my first thought was, okay, awesome. Practice, meeting, like this, that, X, Y, Z, everything. And I went straight into go mode. And then I guess towards the end of the conversation and, you know, the minute I was walking out of the building, my boyfriend was in the parking lot across the way. That was when it kind of hit me. And I was able to call my parents before it was released and celebrate with him. And that was the moment of, wow, I can't believe, like, we did it. We're here. And then that was, again, like I said, that was fleeting because there was business to take care of.
There's certainly business to take care of. And you did. I want to go back to that period of time between when you first went to the athletic director and ultimately it came to fruition. I think one of the fascinating things for me is that you didn't just sit still and let like the process come to you. You were very proactive and you did things to kind of learn on the fly and put yourself in the best possible position. And one of those things is you went and had a conversation with Mac Brown, the mm-hmm. legendary football coach at UNC. And I'm curious, what was that experience like? What did you learn from him? And what were some of the other things maybe that you did during the process to not sit still and to just continue developing your candidacy, but also to developing your craft as a coach and a leader so that ultimately got the job, you'd be ready?
Sure. Well, I've always been fascinated in leadership, coming from being a player, coming from being the youngest, but having that notoriety on a team to being a captain, you know, so anything I was going to converse about, yes, hopefully it was going to help me in my heart be a coach eventually, but it also was helping me every single day because of the lessons I was learning and the conversation I was talking about. And I was raised, I played for the best club in the country growing up. My parents preach it too, but my coach at a very young age always said, you create your own luck. He never said, oh, that was lucky. He never said, oh, that was unlucky. Like, you know, you are in control. And yes, the stars will align at certain points, but you set yourself up for luck to happen. So for me, I wanted this to happen badly. And yes, like all of the pieces fell together, but I had to go and have these conversations. I had to be super aware of how I was handling the locker room and playing while going home at night and working on my coaching resume. You know, like I had to compartmentalize and do all of these things and be proactive, like you're saying. And one of the best things I ever did was the conversation with Mac and Coach Brown. He is just a bucket of wisdom. He is fascinating to talk to. He is a warm, kind-hearted person who just wants to help, but he also has that edge to him that every great does. And I walked in there thinking like I would just be there for an hour, pick his brain a little bit, just kind of begin this, what is this head coach lifestyle like? And what can I take away? And we sat there for, I think, over 2 hours talking, could have sat longer. And then Bubba actually accidentally walked in, which was a blessing in disguise now, because he was like, oh, she's actually serious. And I was like, yeah, you see what I'm doing? Exactly. So it was good in the end, but that wasn't planned. And that's how the meeting kind of ended. But I still look back at my notes that I jotted down with Mac every single day. I've sat with Anson now at this point, Anson Dorrance. I've sat with Jenny Levy. I've picked almost every head coach's brain at some point here just to learn. And they've all, I mean, there's something, multiple things you can take away from each of them. And I have probably a couple of Mac's little secrets that I won't be too public about. But I walked away just understanding and having a better grasp of everything in general, with some awesome points that I could just apply as a teammate and a captain that I still preach today and live by. And then same thing, the minute you sit down with other coaches, that list of just experience and knowledge and tips and philosophies, it just grows. And I think a place like Carolina, it's hard not to really take it in and live by it.
I'm continuously amazed, Erin, at, you know, I have these conversations with successful people from all walks of life every week, and I'm amazed at how the lessons can almost be portable to a lot of different things. I can utilize the lessons professionally in one context, personally in another. And the other powerful thing is when I go back and look at the notes, whether it's from these conversations or from any conversation that I'm having with a mentor or somebody that I'm trying to learn from, even just looking back at those notes 6 months, a year, 6 years later, you take away new things. I think that's particularly fascinating as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely. We talk about it all the time. We want to set them up, our girls up for success out on the field, but everything we preach, everything we live by, all of our values and standards, you need to be able to apply those, yeah, in the classroom, in the community, in your relationships, whatever it is. And I mean, growing up, I was always asked, and I think it's the typical question to ask a young athlete or someone who's passionate about someone and young, who's your idol? Who do you look up to? And for me, I always hated that question because I was like, what do you mean? I have like 30 of them. There's Dean Smith, there's Michael Jordan, there's Serena Williams, there's this, but like, they're all different, even musicians. We were talking about it before we started this recording and everything. Authors, just the list of greats is so massive and the range is so broad but it also often always comes down to similar lessons that they've applied in whatever it is they're doing to be great at that. So that's kind of been my viewpoint too. I don't care if, you know, Coach Brown's coaching a football program, which is a completely different beast than a field hockey program. And I don't care if, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you and you do podcasts, but you're learning everything from all these people and everything can be applied to what I'm doing in some way or another. So I think it's great. I mean, I envy you. This is awesome. You get to chat about being great every single day.
Well, we talk about how to be great every single day, but we also talk a lot about the downs and the adversity and the challenges. And that's a through line through all the conversations too, is that every successful person has experienced an immense amount of hurdles and adversity and resistance. And the common denominator with people who find success or achieve their goals is that they see that adversity as an opportunity to learn and grow. And I think that's been one of the most powerful messages. Speaking of through lines, one of the through lines through my life, Aaron, has often been that I am frequently the youngest person in meetings, youngest person in a lot of audiences. I've done things throughout my career that I don't have, air quote, formal training for, right, or a particular degree in that, yep, realm of work. And it's always been something that's been on my mind. And it's something that I get a lot of questions about. So I'm curious, I mean, given your story, I think you're particularly in a great position to answer questions about this. When you take over as head coach and you go through that whirlwind and you get the team together for the first time, you are now in front of a room of folks that, as you mentioned earlier, players that you were a teammate with, you were their captain, you lived with some of them, mm-hmm, you socialized with all of them, right? Like, how did you process that both yourself first, and then how did you go about communicating how you were going to address that?
Sure.
When you met with the team that initial first time?
Yeah, well, I think, I guess, kind of a two-parted answer, but for me, it opened my eyes, and I think it opened a lot of the team's eyes too, where leaders and people who, I guess, deserve or earn the right to have that respect and trust and everything, it's not just like it started when I walked in that room and said, hey, you know, I'm the head coach now. It was an accumulation of my 5 years at Carolina, my career before that, where people knew, yes, sure, how I played, but more so how I treated my teammates, how I treated my coaches, how I interacted with my parents and other players, you know. And then, yes, when I was here, how, and regardless of what it was, whether it was playing at home in the living room, walking to class, like all of these moments that I had no idea would have helped me now, they did and they were present. So I guess just more so, it was, I don't want to say easier because of that, but because I just focused on doing the right thing, focused on challenging my teammates, but being there for them and cultivating relationships and leading by example in the classroom and on the field, all of that stuff matters. So we talk to our girls all the time. Like, we have people in the leadership group. We have obviously captains. We have everybody else who matters just as much. We have people on the bench and in the starting lineup. Every program and team has a range of everyone, but everything they do adds up and everything they do has value. And everyone's paying attention to it. So we just preach to uphold that reputation, act with integrity, all of that stuff, because you never know where it's going to lead you. And then when it led me to that first initial meeting where Bubba introduced me and Larry Gallo, who's my sport administrator, walked me in front of the team for the first time. One, they had all of those years and all of those actions and the trust in me and who I am to lean back on. And then the second part of my answer is, yeah, my initial conversation with them, I gave my little spiel. I think some were surprised just that it actually happened. I was very transparent, and we'll get to that a little bit more, but with the whole application process, I didn't want them finding out that I was even applying for this through the rumor mill and this and that and things floating around. I, before we went on break, before I applied, sat down with them and I was just like, look, I'm doing this. If you have questions, come to me. They all supported me. I was lucky. I was grateful. They all were like, we want this to happen. Obviously, they didn't have any pull in the case.
Right.
But I just wanted to be transparent from the start And then in that first meeting, that's kind of what we hit on. I talked about transparency. I talked about over communication and respect. And with those 3 points, we talk about over communicating a ton. You can never communicate enough. You see the best organizations, the best companies, programs, whatever it is, leaders, they know how to communicate effectively, clearly, concisely, tailoring to who needs what kind of communication to get the best out of someone. All over. Communication is so underrated, I think, and it's similar to leadership. It's not talked about enough. And then with that, transparency. I needed to be okay with saying, I don't have all the answers. I am learning as well, but I know the right questions to get to the right answers. And you guys know I will bend over backwards and work harder than anybody to make sure you are set up for success. But this has been a team effort more than usual. We constantly ask for their feedback. I think female athletes in general, but even just generationally now, people like understanding the purpose behind things and the why. And of course, there's going to be some decisions where it's, hey, just listen, get on the line, this and that. This is, you know, just trust me. But if that's the case, hey, trust me, this is a coach's decision. Great, no questions. And other, it's like, this is why we're doing it. This is how it's going to help you. And then automatically they buy in way more naturally. And the buy-in's huge. So just the element of transparency, I joke about it. Often we have glass doors throughout the building. I'll show you. It's probably not going to be a cute video, but see. And I'm like, we have glass doors for a reason. We have a complete open door policy. You come to me with anything. We are here to help you. We are here to guide and to be resources, but we have glass doors for a reason. And then the third piece of it, the respect piece, along with the communication and transparency, we know what boundaries are here. We know head coach, player, we understand that, but we also have to respect the process of figuring out these boundaries and what it means for us in our unique situation. And last year is going to look different than this year, than the next year, you know, but we have to be okay with being vulnerable with that, communicating it and respect. And I want to give them respect. It's not like I'm coming in here to be a dictator. That's just never going to work. And I need to give them trust and freedom and respect, but I really need that in return too, and the honesty within that. So with those 3 points, we covered a lot. And then of course, we talked hockey. We talked about this and that and strength and conditioning, and we wouldn't have won a national championship if we didn't. But I think to always fall back on those 3 points when stuff was going great, let's ride it. And when stuff needed to be tweaked here and there and we needed to have a couple hard conversations, look, this is what we talked about, right? This is what we bought in with. You guys all know we all are bought into the common goal, and we need to rely on these 3 things to help us get there. So that was kind of the initial talk that propelled the season and everything in the year.
You think, you talked earlier about all the stuff that you would do as a player and as a captain that really is leadership by example. People mm-hmm. seeing, you know, and believing it because they see it in action from you. Right. Do you feel like that gave the team a much, much higher degree of confidence that if there was something that you didn't know the answer to, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, that you would ultimately be willing and able to seek out an answer on that particular issue or topic that was facing them as a player?
Totally. I think, yeah, I'm a quick learner and I really don't care about asking questions. I will be that annoying person that asks all of the questions because I want to make sure we're doing stuff right, efficiently, to the best of our ability, whatever it is. So yeah, okay, I don't know this answer. Let me figure it out for you or ask this person and communicate. Do it quickly so they know they feel important. They know I will put them at the top of the priority list. One of the things, going back to Mac Brown, one of the biggest takeaways he told me is they need to know you will fight for them. And whatever it is they need, we get it done. We work on it. I communicate that we're working on it. And then, yeah, ultimately we help them with the answer, plan, whatever it is they needed. But I also think it's a lot of where the tarp pullers comes in. No matter what that looks like, you have to be okay and confident with yourself to be able to do that, big or small. It's not like I'm only going and talking to the head coaches of other programs or only going and talking to Bubba. No, if they actually have a silly story, but if they need trash cans in the locker room, I will drive myself to Target. I will use our university credit card and I will bring your trash cans to you. And so that actually happened on, I think it was like the first week, it might have been the first couple of days, I was like, whatever it is you need at the end of this initial conversation with the team, whatever it is you need, we will get it done. Come to me. And we constantly ask for feedback, like I mentioned. The first thing they came to me with is, hey, Aaron, it actually would be really nice if we had little mini trash cans in the bathroom stalls and not just the big one. And I said, okay. Yeah, we've never had that. Thank you. I'll work on it. And here I am thinking like they're going to come to me with this like earth-shattering request and it's little trash cans. And I'm like, yeah, okay, this is great. First little action that I can do to earn your trust and gain respect and everything. So that's what I do. I drive to Target late at night. They're luckily the Super Target near us open till 10. And I grab these like five, they're actually Carolina Blue too. I was like, this is perfect. Little trash cans, put them in the stalls. And the next day I had like five or seven of them come to me like, wow, thank you. Like for the little trash cans. And I was like, great. So all of those things. And yes, normally on a normal basis, we're dealing with a little, I guess, more important questions you could say, but also are they more important? Because that little action and all of those little actions that we do and leading by example every single day, it means a lot and it adds up. And hopefully, you know, it makes them think and know that the staff and myself, we will fight for them.
I love that story, Aaron. I'm smiling from ear to ear. And it's so powerful. And I've spent many years talking about this idea of like, do the little things, do the little things, do the little things. And I'm becoming more and more convinced that there are not little things or big things. There are just things. Mm-hmm. And if they're important to people and they're important to the job that you have to do and to whatever direction you're heading, then they have to be done. And not only did you earn the respect and admiration of your players by your activities when you were their peer and their captain, but those moments mean all the difference. And I feel like I understand so much more about you as a coach now and about why Carolina had so much success under your leadership in its first year, just from that garbage can story. It's crazy to think about, but it means something like that just means everything.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. And we harp on it in the staff office all the time. I'm lucky my assistants are even just managers. Like we preach to the team, yes, but it starts in the office and it bleeds out through these glass doors. But like anything we can do, big or small, and like you said, what is even the definition of that? It adds up. So I totally, we harp on the details every day. And like we do with their play, right? We're not going to just get by with the way we play hockey. So why would we get by with the way we run things, act on a daily basis and everything? So yeah, no, I love it. I love the message. One of our graduate assistant, actually, I haven't read the book yet, but he got me the book, Legacy. He's South African. And it's right next to my nightstand. But one of the chapters I remember him sharing with me is you're never too big to sweep the sheds. And it's the same message of you can be a CEO, you can be a head coach, you can be whoever, but you should never take for granted the fact that you can do all of these little things that create habits, earn respect, this and that, that needs to get done.
100%. I love that book. It's one of my favorites. You are going to love it. And one of the things that I do from time to time is I go back to past guests on the podcast and I ask them for book recommendations. Mm-hmm. And that is one that does come up
really
from past guests.
Okay. I'm going to tell him when he gets here later. I mean, he's going to be ecstatic about it. I'm going to be like, yeah. We'll talk about
him. And you'll have to tell me what you think when you read it, but the sweep the shed and everybody pulls the tarp and Aaron Mattson goes and gets the garbage cans. Like it all works together. Aaron, I'm curious. We've talked a lot about like all the things that you learned as a player and as a captain that kind of work in your favor as a leader and as a head coach. I'm curious, were there things that you had to unlearn or almost like rewire how you thought about that, or almost like your experience and like you almost knew too much?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess, well, how do I want to answer that? It's a great question. And definitely, I think, again, kind of two-parting it. One, that argument in terms of like the team, I know everything about them. And like you said, we were socializing together. We were on Franklin Street together. We were on the end line, you know, doing the run test together. I knew everything about them coming into this, but that helped me. And I think that's one of the things everyone was worried about is she's so closely related. She was just in that inner circle, just in that locker room. How is she going to manage it? But that helped me. I think I thrive on connections and relationships. So instead of, I guess, unlearning it, but in a similar, I guess, pathway of like what we're trying to get at, I liked being able to take everything into account. I knew what they were complaining about. I knew what they were doing and wanted to do. I knew kind of where their mind was at. And I couldn't like partake in certain conversations or obviously events anymore. But it helped me. And I, even now, I meet with them one-on-one once every month. And we talk about everything but hockey. So it's just to connect, learn about where, like the, especially the freshmen and the incomings who I didn't play with, you know, tell me about your family. Tell me about your upgrading. What do you like? What classes excite you? All of this stuff helps me where, yeah, I'm not going to talk to them about all these details every single day. So I guess unlearning in that sense, but it helps me know how I can communicate them to them. What they need when stuff's going well, when stuff's going poorly, how to connect. So that helps. But then I guess the other side of me that's been really interesting, and the girls joke about it. They were like, you were way scarier as a player. And like, trust me, I can still be scary and they don't like seeing that side. They act very well most of the time. So it doesn't come out too often, but I could always lean on the fact of, okay, I'm annoyed and I always played better when I was frustrated and someone ticked me off. But I could always lean on, I'll just do it and they'll earn trust in me in that way. And they'll want the ball in my hands in that way, or they'll want to have a good conversation with me because I can just go out and do it better than anyone, where I'm not out there on the field anymore. But I not struggled, but I guess had to find that balance of having such high standards and being such a perfectionist. And I really struggle when things aren't done perfectly, but I could do that as a player. And then it was okay for me to like get on someone, where now I had to strike that balance and just be more cognizant of the process, of the journey, of asking them the right questions so they discover it within themselves. And it doesn't need to be perfect on day one. We need to play the long game, certain things where it's like reining in a little bit, I guess it could seem like, but without dropping those standards, if that makes sense. So for me, just kind of finding that balance of still being that really intense piece, because they love that and they thrive off of that. You come to Carolina to be pushed and get uncomfortable, but not in like a scary, intimidating sense, because then that trust, that respect, that open door policy, it just doesn't work. So that's been it.
Why do you think it is, Erin? I went back and looked at some clips from your playing days, and I mean, you said fierce or intense or competitive. There is just like this, I mean, crazy intensity to you as a player. But then there's also this other side, which I would characterize as like tremendously kind and empathetic and open-minded. And I'm curious, like, how do you, like, those are two really powerful things to be able to merge together. And obviously you've done it really, really well. What do you think, like, when you dig deep, like, what do you think's enabled you, whether it's as a coach or just in life, like to blend this intensity and competitiveness with this high degree of kindness and empathy?
Also a great question. I guess my initial answer would be I've always, and I don't know why, but I've been very good with compartmentalizing. And I think that allows me to do it better, like to turn the switch on of like, okay, let's get after it. And then, okay, wait, no, I'm here for you. We're okay. And then the right scenarios to pull that out with. I think I've also been very observant and I'm still very vocal. So that's another interesting contradictory thing. I don't know, but like, there's no question that I'm vocal and I like communicating, but I really pick up on all of these little things to then tailor how I do that. So I think that's helped me, but I also just grew up with that kind of upbringing. My parents taught me how to be super intense, but to stay grounded and to set extreme goals and chase things people think you can't do, but take it baby steps and simplify your life and do one thing at a time. So I guess it's just kind of been how I was raised. And it's how, yeah, I run things now. I also, going back to the transparency piece, what you see is what you get. The girls know when I'm going to be intense and what they know what to expect. And then when we're sitting in this room having our monthly check-ins, they know it's going to be more of a conversation. So I guess the consistency in that too. But yeah, I was just raised that way, to be consistent, to do what's right, but have that edge to you. Just know when to pull it out.
Have to have that edge and know when to pull it out. So I'm curious, Erin, as we get ready to wrap up our conversation, and you've been so generous with your time, if you had to identify like one area for growth, because we always can grow, even if we win a national championship every year, there's always something we can do the following year to grow. Do you have one area in mind that you feel like this is an area I really need to grow as a coach or an individual?
I think, well, for us, I guess that's been the other side of it too. It's been me coming in and winning freshman of the year, whatever. Oh, okay, she did that. Great. And then the team winning back-to-back undefeated national championships. Oh, that's the peak of what they can do. No, I want to do it better. Okay, 4 out of 5 years, we win national championships. Great. Like, what else can there be? Okay, let's do it as a first-year head coach with the team. Like, we are always looking to break down barriers and to keep pushing. And I think it falls back on every year, our program and my goal is to bring a national championship trophy back. And we set that, but then we set it and forget it. And we understand the only way to get there is to do our best at practice every single day. Our job as a staff to plan the best video session in the clearest way that gives them just the right amount of information that can help them. All of these little things, again, adding up so that then at the end of the year, oh, look, we have a national championship trophy, right? Rather than harping on that and expecting to go A to Z. And it's like, wait, you have 24 other steps in there that you just skipped over. So for me, it is all about how can we be more efficient? How can we communicate better? How can we be even cleaner with our skills? You can always be better, in my opinion. And I guess that's kind of how I will, you know, run this program, hopefully for years to come, with recruiting, with winning, with all of that stuff. We are always looking to push and stay ahead. And then for me personally, I guess my biggest learning curve has been the management side of things. If you ask me about relationships, great. I can have connections and bond and relate with younger generation, student body, donors, supporters, townspeople, whoever, like not a problem. X's and O's, great. Forget about it. If you want to be the best player in America, you come to UNC and we will get you there. No question. It's more, how can we run efficiently? How can we get better? How can we do things as a staff to make the team's life easier and our own life easier? You know, all of that stuff. So for me, this first year was let's learn, let's grow, let's do something amazing. And we did. And now it's okay. We have that process and what my process was like. And now how can we tweak it in a similar way of their play? How can we get it better? How can we tweak what we do every single day? And how can I do a better job of managing, communicating, organizing, all of that stuff? But that's not necessarily something the team has to worry about.
As I think about our conversation, Erin, and I'm sure I'm going to continue to think about, I'm definitely going to be thinking about it a lot and have new ideas and reflections from it. But I think one of the things, just as we wrap up, as I think about our conversation, that's just really remarkable is your ability, and you described this a little bit in talking about how you were raised and your parents, and your ability to set these really ambitious goals that are way off and far into the future, but dial into the little micro steps that it takes to get there, and being comfortable with the progress and being comfortable with the setbacks when they come. And I think that's remarkable. And it's something that, you know, I know, you know, everybody listening can learn from, and I know it's going to serve you well as you go forward here. I can just visualize it now. And there's like, just like that Michael Jordan picture, there's going to be a picture of you with your hands up and like championship rings on every single one of them. And then a cabinet with the rest of them. So I wish you nothing but the continued success. I know I'm excited to continue following your story. And I know, most importantly, the best is still yet to come. And despite all of the success that you've had as a player and a coach, and a person, most importantly.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I still pinch myself that this is my job and this is where I get to sit and have these conversations. So I appreciate it. But yeah, we like to keep it exciting for everyone. So promise that we will continue that for sure.
Well, keep it exciting. keep buying those garbage cans, filling, you know, every need that those players have. And we'll have to catch up again soon. All right, Aaron, thank you so much. You're forever a part of the Everybody Pulls the Tarp community.
Thank you. Thank you too.
All right, everyone. If you loved this episode, you might also enjoy my interview with Rand Pecknold. In 1994, Rand took the head ice hockey coaching job at Quinnipiac University for a $6,700 salary. At the time, Quinnipiac was playing Division III hockey, coming off of a dismal 6-18 season and practicing at midnight, the only time available at the local rink. Over the past 30 years, Rand catapulted the program to national prominence and recently led the team to its first national championship. This is another episode you don't want to miss. Check it out and let me know what you think. Thank you for joining me this week. Be sure to subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you can catch all of our upcoming episodes. And if you are like me and want a world full of tarp pullers, then leave a review to help others find us. You can also follow me on Twitter at Andrew H. Moses. That's Andrew H. Moses. And be sure to sign up for my email newsletter at everybodypullsthetarp.com/newsletter. I'll share tips and insights to help you achieve maximum success and happiness. Today's a great day to pull the tarp. I am rooting for you. See you next time.